Hi everyone. Before we begin the episode, I have a quick announcement to make. I'm actually going to be doing another live show in the near future, as The Trail Went Cold has been invited to participate in the Ottawa Podcast Festival, which is taking place on Saturday, August the 24th, in my hometown of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. It's an all-day event starting at 1 p.m., which is going to be featuring shows from a number of podcasts from the area, and the Trail Went Cold show has been scheduled for the 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. slot that night. The event is taking place at the Live on Elgin venue, and tickets are only $20 each for the entire day. To purchase tickets or to learn more information, please visit ottawapodcastfestival.com, and we've also got a link to the website in our episode description. Once again, it's taking place next month on August the 24th, and we hope to see some of you folks there. Enjoy the episode.
April 26th, 1980, St. Kilda, Australia. 43-year-old Louise Faulkner and her 2-year-old daughter, Charmian Faulkner, are seen climbing into a car driven by an older man. Louise told a neighbor she was planning to visit her boyfriend at his farm, but she does not return, and both Louise and her daughter are reported missing. The investigation eventually focuses on George Sutherland, a married man who had been carrying on an affair with Louise for years and is believed to be Charmian's biological father. Even though there are a number of reasons to suspect George, he denies any involvement in the disappearances, and Louise and Charmian are never found. After that, the trail went cold.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and for the first time in nearly 2 years, our podcast is going back down under to cover an unsolved cold case from Australia, the 1980 disappearances of Louise Faulkner and her 2-year-old daughter, Charmian Faulkner, which is sometimes referred to as the St. Kilda Mum Mystery. That voice you just heard narrate our opening was Mel Badger, the latest winner of our monthly Trail Went Cold listener voiceover contest, so thank you very much, Mel. This has been a popular recurring contest which we've been carrying on for nearly 2 years now, so if you would like to enter, I will be providing instructions about how to do so at the end of this episode. Anyway, if you're a follower of true crime podcasts, you'll probably know that the medium is quite a big deal in Australia right now. Last year saw the release of The Teacher's Pet, an investigative podcast which explored the unsolved disappearance of Lynette Dawson, a mother of two who vanished in 1982. Lynette's husband, Chris Dawson, was always considered the prime suspect, even though there was never enough evidence to implicate him, but the release of The Teacher's Pet brought the case back into the spotlight and reignited the investigation. As a result, Chris was finally charged with Lynette's murder this past December, even though at the time of this recording, her body has still not been found. Nevertheless, Chris is still scheduled to go on trial for the crime sometime in the future. Anyway, today's featured case took place in Australia just under 2 years before Lynette Dawson's disappearance, and you can see some similarities, though this story is even more tragic, since the victim's 2-year-old daughter went missing alongside her. It involves a divorced mother of four named Louise Faulkner, who had been carrying on a lengthy affair with a man named George Sutherland. Louise gave birth to her youngest daughter, Charmian, after she divorced her husband, and it seems very likely that George was the child's biological father, though he never admitted it. Louise and Charmian both went missing after leaving for an alleged visit with George, but while he's considered to be the prime suspect, the victims' bodies have never been found, and there is no direct evidence that a crime has even been committed. This story also has a number of parallels with another case I featured on the podcast, which has recently been in the news, but I'll talk more about that later on in this episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the unsolved disappearances of Louise and Charmian Faulkner. Our story begins in Australia in 1980. Our two victims are 43-year-old Louise Faulkner and her 2-year-old daughter, Charmian Faulkner, who both live together in a flat on Ackland Street in St. Kilda, an inner suburb located in the metropolitan area of Melbourne. Louise had previously been married to a scientist named Barry Clark and had 3 other children with them before their divorce, a 16-year-old daughter named Melissa, a 19-year-old son named John, and a 9-year-old daughter named Rosalie. On April the 25th, Louise took Charmian to a party being held at the flat of a neighbor named Corinne Wilde, who was celebrating her son's first birthday. While there, Louise told Corinne that she was planning to go see her quote-unquote potato farmer boyfriend the following day. Sure enough, during the early evening of April 26th, Corinne saw Louise and Charmian standing outside their flat and went over to talk to them. Once again, Louise told Corinne that they were going away to meet her boyfriend at his farm. Shortly thereafter, Corinne claimed she saw a white Holden Ute pull up, being driven what she later described as a quote-unquote thick-set, older Australian male. Louise took Charmian towards the Ute and placed her backpack in the vehicle before they both climbed inside. The Ute then drove away, but this would turn out to be the last time Louise and Charmian were seen alive. Over the course of the next week, none of Louise's friends and family heard from her, so on May the 3rd, Louise's daughter, Melissa, and her grandmother went to check her flat. They found no sign of Louise or Charmian, but there was immediate cause for concern. Louise struggled with arthritis and often used a walking stick, but it was left behind at the flat, along with Charmian's stroller. There was food left on the table, and 2 of the single parent welfare checks Louise ordinarily received were still inside her mailbox. Her 2 cats were also still there, and Louise had not made any arrangements for anyone to take care of them while she was gone. While there were no signs of forced entry, drawers from a bedside table were strewn across the bed and looked like they had been ransacked, and a TV set Louise owned was missing. Other items which could not be found were a suitcase, some clothing, and Charmian's birth certificate. This prompted Melissa and her grandmother to visit the St. Kilda police station in order to file a missing persons report. Concern grew when Louise failed to contact any of her 3 children on May 11th, which happened to be Mother's Day, and her bank account was never touched. But unfortunately, it turned out that an official investigation would not be launched until June the 9th, as the officer Melissa originally spoke to had failed to complete the missing persons report. By that point, so much time had passed that the telephone service at Louise's flat was disconnected because of non-payment. This now made it impossible to check the records of the last calls made to and from Louise's number before she went missing. The flat was never secured as a crime scene, and no missing persons posters were ever printed for Louise or Charmian. Nevertheless, police began their investigation and were able to quickly rule out her ex-husband, Barry Clark, as a suspect. Barry was a glider pilot and had detailed logs to show that he had been flying at another location around the time Louise went missing. However, once investigators learned the circumstances of how their marriage came to an end, another potential suspect popped up on the radar. In 1963, Louise worked at an auctioneering firm and became friends with a co-worker named George Sutherland. Louise soon left the job to give birth to her first child, but she and George would wind up working together at another auctioneering firm 12 years later, and this time, he was her manager. Even though George was married himself, and 18 years older than Louise, they soon began an affair. But Barry eventually became suspicious and hired a private investigator to shadow his wife, and the affair was exposed when the PI caught Louise and George traveling to Adelaide together for a romantic getaway. Shortly thereafter, Barry filed for divorce from Louise. He also made sure to inform George's wife, Beryl Sutherland, and their marriage would also wind up ending in divorce. Barry and Louise's divorce became official in July of 1977. Louise moved into her new flat in St. Kilda, and while Barry retained primary custody of their three children, Louise would have weekend visitation with them. But by this point, Louise was pregnant again, and during the divorce proceedings, she claimed that George Sutherland was the father of her unborn child. On October the 30th, she gave birth to a baby girl named Charmian and would raise the child as a single mother, relying on welfare checks to make ends meet. But even though George had divorced his own wife, at no point did he and Louise ever live together, as George moved them to a farm in Parker's Corner, a small rural settlement located near the town of Erica in the Gippsland region. While there, George was involved with the construction on Thompson Dam, worked on a fencing contract, and also did work on a nearby potato farm. He also went through a reconciliation with his ex-wife, Beryl, and while they never officially remarried, she would move in with George again in 1978. In spite of this, George continued on his affair with Louise, as they often went off together on secret getaways through Gippsland. Since Louise did not drive, she had to rely on George to make the 2-hour journey to St. Kilda in order to pick her up and drop her off. However, at no point did George ever acknowledge being Charmian's father, and he was known for showing a disinterest in the child. According to Louise, after she became pregnant, George had told her to get an abortion, but she refused to do so. Nevertheless, George still paid Louise's maternity bills and was present at the hospital for Charmian's birth, and he also provided financial assistance for Louise and her child. In early 1980, George and Beryl's 17-year-old nephew, Michael Webster, came to live with them at their farm so he could help George with his fencing contracts and potato farming. Every few weeks, George would drive Michael back to his home in Woodend, and he would use the opportunity to visit Louise. Once police finally launched a missing persons investigation for Louise and learned about her affair with George, they traveled to his farm in Parker's Corner to take a statement from him, though they never performed a search of his property or his residence. Of course, George denied any involvement in the disappearances, but on August the 27th, only 2 months after he was interviewed, George surprised everyone by selling off his property at a heavily reduced price. Shortly thereafter, George and Beryl left the area and traveled to the United States. Their daughter Barbara lived in the U.S. at that time, so they wound up staying with her for a while, and George would later tell police that they relocated in order to help Barbara with her pie business. George and Beryl went on to travel through the country while living in a camper van and made an attempt to apply for permanent residency in the U.S., but they were ultimately rejected and forced to return to Australia 3 years after they left. In 1982, an investigator with the Victoria Police Department received an anonymous postcard addressed to Seaside Sherlock. The writer claimed they were responsible for the disappearances of Louise and Charmian Faulkner and challenged the investigators to prove it. The case had a complete standstill, though police would re-interview George in 1991, and he continued to deny any involvement in the disappearances. George did finally acknowledge the possibility that he was Charmian's father, though he personally did not believe it, since he claimed that Louise had been involved with several other men and actually laughed and made jokes about her promiscuity during the interview. Around the same time period, George was informed that he received a bequest from Louise's will, but he did not make any attempt to contact her children over this. Once again, the case hit a dead end, but in 2001, Louise's eldest daughter, who now went by the name Melissa Diable, lobbied for it to be reopened, expressing dissatisfaction with the original police investigation. It turned out the original case file had gone missing, and Melissa suspected that police initially had a disinterest in her mother's disappearance because she lived in St. Kilda, which was a fairly seedy area at the time, so Louise may have been written off as a drug addict or a sex worker. Tragically, Louise's youngest daughter, Rosalie, had committed suicide in 1999, and Melissa believed that not having answers about what happened to her mother played a role in Rosalie's decision to take her own life. The investigation would be reopened, and it would turn out that numerous key witnesses were never interviewed, including Louise's neighbor, Corinne Wilde, who had been told by Luis she was planning to visit her quote-unquote potato farmer boyfriend before she went missing. In fact, the previous weekend, Luis had visited her three children and even told her son John that she would soon be going away with George Sutherland, but none of the children were interviewed by police at that time. As you recall, Corinne Wilde had last seen Luis and Charmian being picked up by an older man driving a white Holden Ute, though she did not get a clear look at him. The new investigation revealed that the potato farmer George worked for in Parker's Corner had once owned a white Holden Ute before he traded it in, and it seemed likely George had access to the vehicle at that time. George was re-interviewed by police again and said that he had not even done any potato farming in the year prior to the disappearances. He claimed that the last time he saw Luis or Charmian was in March of 1980, 1 month before they went missing, when he accompanied them to the St. Kilda Festival. His last official contact with Luis was when he spoke with her on the phone on April the 14th. George's alibi was that he spent April the 25th at a hotel and a pub in the town of Erica, and then worked on his property the following day, but there were no witnesses who could support this. However, there were witnesses who thought they saw him driving a white Holden Ute on those days, but George denied this. He expressed his belief that Luis had taken Charmian and run off with another man, and when asked if he loved Luis, George replied, quote, "Well, that's a peculiar word in my opinion. It's just a matter of attraction, and that's it," end quote. The new investigation failed to turn up any evidence to implicate George or anyone else in the disappearances, though it helped the case garner more attention, and it would become known as the St. Kilda Mum Mystery. But in August of 2006, the coroner's court would hold an official inquest into the case. This came about after the media received an anonymous letter which read, quote, "I ran into George Sutherland in Mo in early May of 1980 and asked him about Big Boobs and Charmaine. He said it was Charmian, not Charmaine, and I wouldn't be seeing them again as he had got rid of them," end quote. George also apparently said, quote, "She thought she owned me and wanted me to be more of a father to the kid, and at my age, that's bullshit," end quote. At the time, there apparently was a lot of gossip in the community that George had been complaining about his girlfriend bleeding him dry of money. The writer claimed that when George said he, quote-unquote, got rid of them, they initially thought he was referring to a breakup, but once they learned about Luis and Charmian's disappearances, they became frightened of George and made it a point to steer clear of him. Anyway, a public plea was made for the anonymous writer to come forward, and while they never did, this new evidence was enough to launch a coronial inquest. At the inquest, Melissa would testify that after Luis and Charmian went missing, George made no attempt to assist in the search effort and never contacted her or her siblings. She recounted an incident where she visited her mother's flat when George was there. According to Melissa, Charmian would always cry whenever George went near her, prompting Luis to say, quote, "She doesn't even recognize you. You are her father, and she doesn't see you enough," end quote. Melissa even said that after her mother and half-sister's disappearances, she changed her name for fear of her own safety. By this point, George was 85 years old and living as a pensioner in the town of Burnie, and his wife Beryl was still with him. While speaking to the media, George did acknowledge the possibility that Luis might have, quote-unquote, sneakily gone off the pill while they were together, and when asked if he felt any pain over Charmian's disappearance, George replied, quote, "No, because I didn't see the child enough to become attached to it," end quote. He also stated that he had a good idea who killed Luis and Charmian, but never elaborated. However, while George was open to speaking with the media, he refused to testify at the inquest on the grounds that he might incriminate himself. But Beryl Sutherland did agree to testify at the inquest and said that she never minded her husband having an affair with Luis while they were married. She also claimed that she never even learned about the disappearances or that her husband was considered a potential suspect until after they returned to Australia from the US years later. It would turn out that another woman had come forward who alleged that she once had an affair with George. When Beryl found out about this, she supposedly threatened the woman over the phone for several hours, but when asked about this incident on the stand, Beryl denied that it ever took place. The Sutherlands' nephew, Michael Webster, who had lived with them on their farm in 1980, also testified at the inquest. He recounted an incident where his Uncle George drove past a reservoir near Melbourne Airport and commented, quote, "If you ever wanted to get rid of somebody, you could chuck them in the reservoir and they would never be found," end quote. When the inquest came to an end, the coroner's court concluded that Louise and Charmian had likely been murdered, and while George Sutherland was named as a person of interest, there was not enough evidence to implicate him. During this time period, Melissiah went all out in the search effort for her mother and half-sister. She started a foundation called the Louise and Charmian Foundation, which aimed not only to solve their disappearances, but many other missing persons cases from Australia. Melissiah and her brother, John, performed their own searches of the bushland near Parker's Corner, where George's former property was located, but this proved difficult due to the ruggedness and vastness of the terrain. Excavations were performed on a garage on the property containing a mechanics pit, which had been filled in, as well as a local mine shaft, but they ultimately turned up nothing. In total, Melissiah estimated that she spent $70,000 of her own money on the search efforts and nearly lost her house because of the financial burden. She even released a CD single titled Louise and Charmian in order to raise money for their foundation, but as far as I can tell, the foundation is no longer around. Following the inquest, Melissiah and John wrote a letter to George, asking him to end their anguish by revealing what happened. They even said they would be content with an anonymous tip-off about where the location of Louise and Charmian's bodies were, but they never received a response. So unfortunately, after nearly 40 years, the St. Kilda Mum mystery remains unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So like I mentioned in the intro, this story has a number of parallels with another case I covered on the podcast nearly 3 years ago, and it's actually quite stunning how similar they really are. You might recall my episode about the disappearances of Renee McRae and her 3-year-old son, Andrew McRae. Both vanished in Scotland in 1976 after Renee's burning car was found at an isolated lay-by. Like Louise and Charmian Faulkner, Renee and her son went missing after leaving together on a trip. And it would turn out that even though she was married, Renee had been carrying on a years-long affair with a man named Bill McDowell, who was also married himself. Not only that, but it also turned out that Bill was Andrew's biological father, much like how George Sutherland was believed to be Charmian's father. In both these cases, the victim's male lover is considered to be the prime suspect, as it's quite clear they had no interest in being a father to their illegitimate child. What's also interesting is that in spite of their infidelity, the wives of Bill McDowell and George Sutherland have always stuck by them, even after they become potential suspects in 2 murders. Of course, this has led to speculation that the wives were complicit in these crimes, or at the very least, knew more about them than they're letting on. Anyway, at the time of this recording, there have actually been some major recent developments in the McRae case, as a quarry located near the lay-by where the burning car was found, has been drained. This has led to the discovery of some parts, which may have belonged to Andrew's pushchair, which was never found. If the investigation is on the right track, there is still a decent chance that Renee and Andrew's remains will be found, and this case can be solved after more than 4 decades. Bill McDowell and his wife Rosemary are both currently still alive, so they could conceivably be arrested if new evidence surfaces to implicate them. But I'm not so sure the same thing can be said about the Louise and Charmian Faulkner case. While I haven't been able to find any official confirmation that George Sutherland is deceased, he would nearly be 100 years old today if he was alive, so I'd say the odds are not great that he is still with us. Even though he refused to testify at the coronial inquest in 2006, George didn't seem to have much hesitation about talking about the case with the media. But he was 85 years old by that point, so I think he knew he did not have much time left, and there was little chance he would ever see the inside of a prison cell. Now, one unique aspect of this story is that Louise's oldest daughter, Melissa, became such a major advocate for and has spent thousands of dollars trying to uncover the truth about what happened, but the ironic thing is, that it sounds like they had a very tumultuous relationship. Quite frankly, this is one of those cases in which the victim has not been painted as a perfect saint. At the inquest, Melissa testified that she was her mother's least favorite child, and that while Louise could be a kind, compassionate person, she could also be quite violent and controlling as well. Melissa actually recounted incidents where Louise pushed her through a glass cabinet, locked her in a shed, and repeatedly hit her with a strap and wooden spoon. She stated, quote, "Some days it was like Disneyland, other days it was like the depths of hell," end quote. And it also seems like Louise's ex-husband, Barry Clark, did not think too highly of her. Obviously, there is going to be some resentment since Louise cheated on him, but Barry described his ex-wife as a violent, manipulative, and financially irresponsible person who was often flirtatious with other men during their marriage. I don't think Barry has ever had much emotional investment in finding out what happened to Louise, or Charmian for that matter, since she was not his biological daughter. So yes, it definitely sounds like Louise had her issues, but we cannot forget that she was still a victim here and did not deserve to be murdered. Louise had actually known George for about 17 years at that point, dating back to when they first started working together, and the Sutherlands even sent her a card after she gave birth to her first child. Whatever problems they may have had in the relationship, she probably never expected George would go so far as to kill her. And regardless of what anyone may have thought of Louise, her daughter Charmian was an innocent 2-year-old child, and the fact that she was likely murdered as well is unconscionable. So even though Melissa may have had a rocky relationship with her mother, it's obvious that she still has great love for her and her half-sister, and will not find peace until she learns what happened to them. I mentioned the Teacher's Pet podcast, which covered another decades-old missing persons case from Australia where a mother disappeared. Even though it makes no secret about the fact that everyone believes the victim's husband was responsible, they just couldn't build up a strong enough case to charge him with the crime until this past year. The same logic applies to this case. Virtually everyone thinks that George Sutherland is the guilty party here, but since the victim's bodies have never been found, and there is no direct evidence that a crime has been committed, he has gotten away with it for 4 decades. All that being said, there are still a number of unanswered questions about this crime, particularly when it comes to the potential motive. Even though George Sutherland has never admitted it, it's pretty obvious that he was Charmian's biological father. As the years went on, George finally started acknowledging that perhaps he was the father, but since Louise was promiscuous and involved with so many other men, there's no way anyone could be 100% sure. Well, a number of Louise's friends have disputed this, because even though she did cheat on her husband to have an affair with George, it sounds like she was so smitten with George that she did not hook up with anyone else while she was with him, so it's very unlikely that another man was Charmian's father. At one point, George pointed the finger at a man named Lee Bassett, whom he alleged was having an affair with Louise. There's not much information out there about this guy, but he apparently did move to the United States, and when questioned about his possible role in the disappearances, he denied any involvement and claimed that he lost touch with Louise in 1980. Around the time of the coronial inquest, George liked to say during his interviews that he had a pretty good idea who did it, but he never elaborated on this, and I seriously doubt that Louise had another secret lover out there who decided to murder her and her child. Remember, right before she disappeared, Louise told her neighbor, Corinne, that she was planning to go visit her quote-unquote potato farmer boyfriend. Even though George tried to claim that he hadn't done any potato farming in a year at that point, really, what are the odds that Louise would have a completely different boyfriend who was a potato farmer? Louise and Charmian were picked up in a white Holden Ute, which George apparently would have had access to at that time. Corinne didn't get a good look at the driver, but she described him as an older male, and George was nearly 60 years old by that point. When you consider the circumstances of how the two victims vanished, this case might have been solved relatively quickly if the police had been on the ball. But the officer who received the initial missing persons report literally took over a month to complete it. I know it's been theorized that this lackadaisical attitude was due to the fact that Louise lived in St. Kilda, which was not the nicest area, so they just kind of wrote off Louise as some sort of drug addict or sex worker. But even so, A 2-year-old child also went missing, so I cannot believe there wasn't more urgency to at least find out what happened to Charmian. Yeah, the original investigation was botched in a huge way, because when they initially interviewed George Sutherland, it sounds like they were not even aware that Louise had told people about her plans to visit him. If so, they might have decided to perform a search of his farm. Instead, George immediately sold the property and traveled to the United States with his wife Beryl, and they probably would have stayed there if they had not been denied permanent residency. According to everyone who lived in the community, the Sutherlands never gave any indication they were going to do this, and just took off completely out of left field. The real estate agent who sold the property commented on how surprised they were by George's willingness to incur a loss by selling it for much less than it was worth. So while the police never searched the property, I'm sure George wanted to be as far away from there as possible if they did. It's also interesting how one of the investigators received an anonymous postcard from someone who claimed they were responsible for the Faulkner disappearances and challenged the police to prove it. I'm not sure if they ever determined where the postcard was originally sent from, but this was in 1982, when George still would have been in the US. If he did send it, he was probably under the mistaken impression that he'd get to stay there permanently and that the Australian authorities would never be able to touch him. Anyway, the other big piece of evidence in this case was the anonymous confession letter sent to the media in 2006 by someone who claimed that George told them he'd gotten rid of Louise and Charmian. This letter kind of addresses one of the biggest unanswered questions about this case. If George murdered them, what was his motive? After all, even though George denied being Charmian's father, it's not like it was some big secret, as Louise flat out put it on the record during her divorce proceedings, and everyone pretty much assumed that he was. And while George got divorced from Beryl after his affair with Louise was exposed in 1975, they eventually wound up getting back together, and Beryl would testify during the inquest that she did not even mind that her husband was still screwing around with Louise. So with the whole arrangement being such an open secret, what would drive George to commit murder? Well, if the anonymous letter about George's confession is accurate, Louise was apparently putting more pressure on him to be a father to Charmian. Given that he was nearly 60 years old and already had an adult daughter, it seems like he had no interest in being a father again at that stage of his life. He was also apparently heard complaining that his girlfriend was bleeding him dry of money. Even though George denied being the child's father, he still paid Louise's maternity bills when she gave birth, and she probably relied on George for financial support for Charmian, since her only other income was single-parent welfare checks, and she was also experiencing medical problems because of arthritis. So it's possible that George just reached his breaking point and decided to get rid of both of them. All that being said, we can't even be certain that the anonymous letter is legitimate. The writer claimed that once it became apparent that George had committed murder, they became frightened and stayed clear of him. Fair enough, but George also wound up moving to the US only a few months later. If the writer was scared of George, couldn't they have come forward once they knew he was out of the country, thousands of miles away? What made them suddenly decide to send an anonymous letter 26 years after the fact? However, if the letter was compelling enough to bring about a coronial inquest, then I assume the authorities have good reason to believe it's credible. One of the stranger aspects of this case are the circumstances of Louise's flat when Melissa and her grandmother went there a week after she went missing. They discovered some drawers were strewn across a bed and appeared to have been ransacked, and Melissa has always maintained that Charmian's birth certificate was missing. That seems extra unusual when you consider that more essential items were left behind, such as Louise's walking stick and Charmian's stroller. That indicates to me that either A. George specifically requested that Louise bring Charmian's birth certificate on their trip, or B. George returned to the flat at a later time and searched through those drawers until he found the birth certificate himself. Personally, I think the answer is B. It's possible that Louise listed George as the father on the birth certificate, which is why he felt compelled to get rid of it. The main reason I believe George returned to the flat is because of another unusual item which was missing, Louise's television set. George was the one who bought her that TV set, and there doesn't seem to be any reason for Louise to take it on a trip, especially when you consider that Corinne Wilde saw her leave, and only saw Louise place a backpack, which I seriously doubt contained a TV set, in the Holden Ute before it drove away. As petty as it sounds, I have to wonder if George was such a cheapskate that he decided to repossess Louise's TV after he killed her. Once again, this was another misstep in the original investigation, as the police never secured the flat as a crime scene or took any forensics. Anyway, there's one major wild card in this case, and that's Beryl Sutherland. I'm going to go back and make another comparison to the Reaney and Andrew McRae disappearance. In that case, Bill McDowell's wife, Rosemary, stayed with him even after learning that her husband had an affair and fathered an illegitimate child, and she is still married to him to this day. Shortly after the disappearances, Bill voluntarily walked into a police station to make a statement, but before he had a chance to say anything, Rosemary dragged him away, and Bill never spoke to the police again. For this reason, it's been theorized that either Rosemary helped Bill dispose of the bodies after he murdered Reaney and Andrew, or that Rosemary was actually the one who killed them, and Bill assisted with the cover-up and wanted to confess. So what if we have a similar situation with Beryl Sutherland? Now, it doesn't look like anyone has ever formally accused Beryl of being involved with what happened to Louise and Charmian, but if she isn't, then she must have been in serious denial about her husband. I know Beryl claimed that she didn't even learn about the disappearances until she returned to Australia from the United States years later, but did she not find it odd that George made a spur-of-the-moment decision to sell his property at a huge loss and relocate to the other side of the globe? And even after she found out that her husband was suspected of murdering two people, one of whom was a child, she stayed with him. When the coronial inquest made the news, and the media started phoning the Sutherlands' residence to speak to George, Beryl would apparently answer the phone and chew them out, though she ultimately handed the phone over to him. I actually read a book about the case, which featured this quote about Beryl: "She takes Stand By Your Man to a level that would embarrass Tammy Wynette." It's also interesting how even though Beryl testified that she did not care if her husband was screwing around, another woman apparently claimed that Beryl threatened her once she learned she was having an affair with George. So part of me wonders whether this might be a Bill and Rosemary McDowell situation, where George invited Louise on one of their secret getaways, but had no intention of killing her. However, when Beryl found out about it, she murdered Louise and Charmian, and forced George to help her dispose of the bodies and cover up the crime. However, if this was originally planned as nothing more than a romantic getaway, I'm not so sure Louise would have brought Charmian along. This tells me the whole thing was premeditated, and that George knew he was going to murder both of them when he picked them up. While it's possible that Beryl had no involvement in the actual murders, it would not surprise me too much if she was complicit in the cover-up, or at the very least, knew more than she let on. So what actually became of Louise and Charmian? Well, the problem is that since George owned a large piece of property in a vast rural area, there are so many places where he could have disposed of the remains. Since George worked construction on the Thompson Dam at that time, there were rumors that he could have hidden the bodies in there, but if you've ever listened to my previous episode about the Springfield 3 case, and the infamous theory about the victims being buried under a hospital parking garage, you can hear my detailed explanation about why encasing human remains in concrete during a construction project without anybody noticing is extremely unlikely. I know that George's nephew testified at the inquest that his uncle once made incriminating remarks about getting rid of someone while they were driving past a reservoir. That could be where Louise and Charmian wound up, but if that's the case, recovering them would be a difficult ordeal. Over the years, Melissai has spent a ton of money on search efforts and excavations, but without any solid leads about where the victims might be buried, there are just too many places to check. The unfortunate thing is that the only man who might know the truth, George Sutherland, is likely deceased and took that secret to his grave. It's unknown if Beryl Sutherland is still alive today, but if she actually knows what happened to Louise and Charmian, she might be one of the last hopes of ever finding them. So all things considered, This is one of the least mysterious cases ever featured on The Trail Went Cold, as it's obvious that George Sutherland was the guilty party. This was a truly heinous and evil act, as not only did he murder a woman he'd been having an affair with, but he also murdered a 2-year-old child he fathered with her because he wanted to avoid the responsibility. It's unfortunate that he escaped justice while he was alive, so the only sort of closure which can be provided for Louise and Charmian's surviving family is to recover their remains and give them a proper burial. While the prime suspect is no longer around, someone out there might still know something. After all, a search is currently underway to potentially recover the remains of Renee and Andrew McRae, who went missing way back in 1976, so all hope shouldn't be lost in this case. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearances of Louise and Charmian Faulkner, please contact the appropriate authorities. Anyway, another special thanks to Mel Badger for doing such a great job at narrating our opening. If you have already entered our listener voiceover contest before, then you are automatically eligible for our next random drawing, so you don't have to do anything. But if you would like to enter the contest, but haven't already done so, send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, naming the one unsolved cold case you would most like to see featured on this podcast. Once again, send me an email under Trail Went Cold Contest to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past year, we've already produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in Tiers 2 and 3, and last month, we released a bonus episode titled The CrimeCon Chronicles, in which I shared my personal experiences attending CrimeCon these past 3 years. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also released a new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up to support us on Patreon this week, and they are Julian K., Jamie R., Sarah S., Aaron H., Brad P., and Chantel R. Thank you so much for your support. And before we bring this episode to a close, I'd like to play a promo for a Texas-based true crime podcast from two fine folks I just met at the True Crime Podcast Festival 2 weeks ago. It's called All Crime, No Cattle. Have a listen.
Hi, true crime fans. I'm Erin.
And I'm Shay. We host All Crime, No Cattle, a conversational podcast which focuses on true crime stories from the Lone Star State.
We strive to bring you a balanced and well-researched story about Texas cases big and small.
We do the research so you don't have to.
We also end every episode with a good news story, just to remind everyone that real life isn't quite as depressing as true crime can make it out to be.
New episodes drop every Thursday, and you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. All Crime, No Cattle, because crime is bigger in Texas, y'all.
And of course, on August the 18th, less than a month from now, I will be participating in another true crime podcasting event at the Royal Cinema in Toronto, which will also include Christy from Canadian True Crime, Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast, Nina from Already Gone, and Aaron from Generation Y. At the event, we will be doing a presentation about the Donnellys, an infamous Canadian true crime case from the 19th century, and the show will also include panel discussions, an interactive Q&A, and a meet and greet. Tickets are $25 each, and you can find the link to our website to purchase them in our episode description. I also just want to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join me next Wednesday for another new episode of The Trail Went Cold. Thank you.